Would you identify yourselves, please?
Yep. I'm him. He's me. I'm Frank.
I'm John. I play guitar. On my left is Paul, plays guitar as well. And on my right is Stephen.
Yes.
What's that band called?
The Trash Can Sinatras.
You know, good. I've got the right band in the studio. Okay, Cake was released in the UK in, what, 89, right?
Something like that.
And 90 here.
Yes.
So we're at 2010.
Oh, I see. Right.
So this is 20 years.
Right.
So maybe people are just getting... Maybe people are getting nostalgic just because, you know, it's like the 20-year itch to hear, you know, Obscurity Knox or whatever it is. It could be.
It is strange to be sort of part of that, I suppose, and to realize that's all it is. It's just run-of-the-mill nostalgia.
Run-of-the-mill. Now, that's a good name for your next album.
Run-of-the-mill nostalgia.
Run-of-the-mill nostalgia works.
Cecil B-DeMille.
What would be interesting, because it has been many years, we've now identified how many years, is some sort of interesting revisionist history about this band, and not the, well, we started in, we're a Glaswegian band, and we started here, and we did this, and we did that. But more so kind of looking back on 20 years, what are some of the things that maybe you haven't really talked about that are the essence of this band that you'd like people to know? Is there, you know, because again, I could go back to the old interview and play that and I don't think the history of the band would change per se.
Mm-hmm.
But is there some updatable way to tell people what this band's all about based on all this new exciting knowledge you have over the past 5 years?
That's really difficult to say, really. I mean, it's hard for us to see ourselves, you know, from the inside out, you know. We kind of come on tour and we're kind of exposed, I think, and people ask us questions, then we kind of realise that, oh yeah, time has moved on. People are expecting something new or something different, but we are getting more natural as we get older, I think. We're settling into something that a groove that's very natural for us.
But when you say settling into something natural, is that more musical or comfort with the fact that you're around 20 years later?
Better both, probably. It's nice to survive and still be, you know, doing something you enjoyed.
This was never designed, and this is kind of a rhetorical question, but I don't believe this was ever designed to be a one-hit wonder band. You made records from the very beginning. Again, circling back, you know, there's a synergy to the songs. There's a balance to the songs. It's not like you said, okay, the first track's going to be this, and then let me see. I just want to see what track the hit is. So the hit, theoretically, at least the hit here in the U.S., on this record is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's track 7 on Cake.
We just made songs. And that was where the joy lay. And kind of after that, it was a little bit of a mystery, you know, wrapping them up and knowing how to put them into the world.
And have you been able to predict, did you know when you made Cake that track was going to be it? Or did you know all the dark horses or that, you know, did you have any sense of which one was really going to take?
You have a sense of which ones are really working, absolutely. But as far as which ones would get played on the radio, just a very slight idea,
right?
A slight kind of hope.
And is it different? You know? Is it different over there when you're dealing with the Beeb and with, you know, with other things where you might know it better as opposed to American radio, which is just this cacophony of insanity?
Well, we might know it better, but it's very hard to get into those stations unless you've got like a powerful plugger behind you.
Yes.
Or a powerful label. You know, you're relying on like DJs such as yourself who've got a bit of character and a bit of taste.
This came out on, you know, Polygram London.
Seagram's.
Right? You know, on a big label. And then you kind of moved into, you know, by weightlifting, most certainly, you were in indie land. This is an experienced band. So what's it like to be this band today in this world, which is a very much a, you know, it's about the social networking and it's about your Facebook page and it's about, you know, I don't want to say it's about everything but the music, but in many ways, the music has to provide, but other things have to provide more in order for the music to provide.
We're quite lucky that we had a sort of initial push, so we have a fan base. So we can use the places that you're talking about, Facebook, MySpace, to sort of get in touch with those guys, and those guys can use it also to try and help us recruit new people, new listeners.
Right, so you didn't
so
have to go out
there.
So
we're in a lucky position. I mean, we're definitely reaping the rewards of, like, having a major push at the very beginning.
Yeah, you didn't have to go out there as a new artist and build a fan base.
Yeah. And how to get yourself seen amongst it all is...
So is Low Five your label, or is that a label over there?
It's a label that our management has set up.
Recorded in New York, but then overdubs and editing and other stuff in Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
A lovely place. If you're going to pick a Scotland-like, not New York... Although New York, you know, Glasgow, maybe, right?
There's the grid system.
Yeah, the grid system, some industrial parts, mm-hmm. you know, all of that.
Yeah.
Why the choice? Was it a choice of engineer, choice of studio?
No, actually, Andy Chase produced it.
A guy from
New York who had the studio, and he actually mixed the previous album.
Right.
So there was a continuation. We just wanted to do something with giving him the producer's hat, you know.
Nice.
And that meant going to his studio, so things tend to just, you know, make itself clear what we had to do, and go to New York was unfortunately what we had to do.
Unfortunately. And I kind of know, he said, leading into this question in a strange way, why you might have gone to Martha's Vineyard.
Right.
Was there some vocalist lady or something? Was there some reason?
No, that came
it?
Second. That was the other way around, really.
Was it really?
Yeah. Martha's Vineyard was another connection through the producer, and he had a place there, and he suggested that we go there and really talked it up, and he wasn't exaggerating. It was absolutely beautiful, you know.
And how did Carly come into the picture?
Well, she's a neighbour on the island, and Andy's family are friendly with her family, and I think he'd pass an acquaintance with her.
So was she a fan of the band?
I don't think she'd heard of us, but a friend of her, she wasn't in town and we were there, and a friend of hers came round and we played a few tracks to her, and she seemed to think that Carly would really fall in love with some of them, so she took them away with her, and I wrote a letter, you know, explaining to him how big fans we were of Carly and her work over the years and what it meant to us. And next thing you knew, we got a call saying she loved one of the songs, and next time she'd a free spot, she would go and do some vocals. So we missed her in the studio. She just went down to New York to Andy's place and recorded it for a couple of days.
Yeah, so she tracked it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was beautiful hearing when we get sent the MP3 of our work. It was
Having a real renaissance.
Yeah, I think she's actually playing Britain for the very first time, which I think
is she really?
Believe. Yeah. She's never done that before, but she's, I think she's pretty shy. Without getting too gossipy about it, I think that's what we heard. She's pretty shy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure she...
Which is nice.
I don't think she loves performing.
No, yeah. I think she gets quite stage fright.
Yeah.
But it's hard for anybody, I think, especially like a woman, to carry a whole sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a band, you can sort of shelter behind each other a little bit.
Yeah. There's 10 tracks, but there's eight things here, mm-hmm. and these are really, you know, when you really think about it, people get some amazing, you know, they get all the dark horses and weightlifting, they get all sorts of bonus points, and also from the business side of things and social media side of things, this is really smart, because it leads people back to saying, wait a minute, I didn't really know that song, I think I better go back and go back to the catalog and find some other things.
Right. I think there's always...
So I think you were social media geniuses before you even knew there was social media.
I think that comes through the old days. Like, we grew up, I listened to The Jam, for instance. Their singles weren't even on the albums, and then the B-sides were great. And I think when we first started, it was a case of, like, we'd do that with B-sides, you know, we'd try and maximise the sort of value of the product or whatever it was. And then that's kind of disappeared, so... We're looking for other ways to put more music on the CD, you know.
Well, what do you think? You think we should play some songs?
Yeah.
Sure.